Woodbury Reports with your host, Lon Woodbury, talking with leading professionals about how parents and others can help their struggling teens, preteens, and young adults. Now here's your host, Lon Woodbury.
Welcome back to the Woodbury Report. I'm Lon Woodbury, an independent educational consultant located in North Idaho. Today is January the 12th, 2017, and this morning we have a guest, Chelsea Stroud. Chelsea, good morning. Glad to have you here.
Good morning, Lon. Thanks for having me.
Now, Chelsea is the admissions director for Academy at Sisters in Oregon. She's been there and doing that work for 14 years, and she's working on her master's degree in counseling and is a certified parent coach. Very interesting background. So should help you when you work with the kids, and particularly the kids when they're enrolling. The kids are scared. The parents are even more scared. I know all that. But the topic is why mindful self-compassion for struggling teens. So what do you mean by mindful self-compassion?
Okay, so self-compassion is kind of just what it sounds like, being kind to oneself. But more specifically, Kristen Neff has done a lot of research and work around this, and she defines it as having equal kindness and care for both the self and others in times of hardship or human imperfection. And the way she describes it, which I like, is it's comprised of three main components. And so those three being self-kindness, which, again, is kind of self-explanatory, common humanity, and what this common humanity refers to, you know, others are probably going through the same thing. Having that sense of common humanity is, you know, recognizing that all people have problems and make mistakes or might feel inadequate in some way. And then mindfulness, which I know a lot of people know about mindfulness now because it's gained so much popularity, but as it pertains to this, it involves, you know, being aware of the present moment experience in a more clear and balanced way so that the person neither is ignoring nor ruminating or over-identifying with disliked, you know, aspects of themselves or life or whatever situation that they're going through that's difficult and seems so terrible at the moment.
That sounds like maybe it's something like being detached from your issues a little bit emotionally.
Well, and I think it's recognizing and allowing oneself to feel those feelings, but also being able to tend to it with sort of this energy of compassion towards oneself so that it doesn't make it as difficult to feel those feelings.
So you're not beating up on yourself as much.
Exactly.
Okay, exactly. All of us, I think, have a tendency to do that. It seems to be part of the human condition, so it's good to work on.
Yes.
Okay, so why is that important for working with struggling teens? Now, your students there, it's an all-girls program, incidentally, I forgot to mention, but the girls are there, have had a lot of problems, they're struggling, and off the rails, and that's why the parents have sent them to a residential program. So why is this so necessary for these kids? I know it's necessary probably for everybody, but especially these kids. Troubled teens is another term that's oftentimes used. I don't like that as much, but why is that?
I don't either,
Why is it so important for these kids?
Well, for one, as you know, and like as you mentioned, the girls who are coming to our program have had, you know, various struggles, and often, I mean, depression and anxiety are honestly the number one and two diagnoses that we hear. Often along with that comes, you know, kind of this lack of self-confidence. Some girls might have a history of self-harm. There's just a lot of issues that they're going through, and so what self-compassion has been shown to do is, well, one, it promotes resilience in adolescents through, it promotes emotional regulation, self-acceptance. I mean, I'm sure we all know that negative self-judgment can cause higher anxiety and depression, and it's also been noted to cause to be associated with attempted suicide. And negative ruminations have a negative impact on our health and our well-being. And so, on the contrary, self-compassion has actually been shown in Kristen Neff's studies and in what is being shown across the country when clients or students are practicing self-compassion, is that self-compassion is really strongly related to psychological well-being. So it increases happiness, optimism, a sense of connectedness. It decreases anxiety, depression, neurotic perfectionism, the rumination that I was talking about. It's also been shown in Kristen Neff's research on achievement goals and for students coping with academic failure, those who had a higher level of self-compassion could receive a poor grade without engaging in self-blame and feelings of isolation or over-identifying with that failure. And so, I mean, that resilience piece, Lon, is really huge in terms of, sustaining adolescents and people in general. And one other thing that I would say that I think is important, because a lot of programs, talk about self-esteem and raising self-esteem in students. And in Kristen Neff's work and Chris Germer's work on self-compassion, what they've actually looked at is self-compassion versus self-esteem. And what they found is that self-esteem contributes to more problem behaviors and discomfort with their own feelings. So problem behaviors being like bullying, aggression, anger, narcissism. And so when compared with self-esteem, self-compassion was actually found to be more related to more unconditional feelings of self-worth over time, which is important. So not just here and there, but over time. And unconditional feelings of self-worth.
Let me interrupt with a thought I've been having when you were talking. Would it be fair to say that what you're doing with the mindful self-compassion is an effective and realistic way to help kids learn to get over it?
What I think is that it helps them get through it as opposed to over it. Because I think what happens is a lot of times kids will try to get over it by not acknowledging their feelings, not acknowledging their experience, having that self-judgment, or just trying to numb themselves with drugs or alcohol or sex or whatever it may be in order to not feel what they're feeling. And so I think with self-compassion, what that does is helps them to, again, just to be able to tend to those feelings, to allow them to experience them, which is important. When we choose not to experience the feelings that we have or acknowledge them and actually feel them, then it can create mental, emotional, and even physical problems and manifest, we often hear, I know in admissions, I often read testing for students, psychological testing for students, and it's might say, she has, this young woman has psychosomatic issues, and usually if they're experiencing a lot of headaches and stomach aches and things like that, it's manifesting there because they're avoiding feeling their emotions. So self-compassion seems to really help bring people closer to that, to being able to feel those feelings, but with some kindness towards themselves.
Okay, how does it, what does it look like? What do you do there with the kids? Now, I'm seeing a picture of some kids that have been sort of rebellious, not listening very well, and being rough on themselves. So how does it look? Mm-hmm. How do you get this, the term a little bit boisterous or rambunctious or self-centered kids together? How do you get them focused, change their thinking into where they get to a mindful self-compassion? What does it look like?
Well, so, and you actually, real quickly, you brought up such a great point, because self-compassion is not self-pity and it's not self-centeredness. And in fact, it's been shown to also increase adolescents and other people's adults, even our ability to have compassion for others that we normally might not. And so what that can look like Just as a few examples. Now, if you go on to the selfcompassion.org website, you'll see that there are a lot of different meditations as well as different exercises that can be done. So that's where I've drawn from the work of Kristen Neff. And so as part of my internship, when I was running a self-compassion group for the students at the Academy of Sisters, I utilized a few of these exercises and meditations. So one was, this is a great one, I think. It's a writing exercise in which you can kind of respond to yourself, you know, think of a situation that's difficult or that you're experiencing, and then respond to yourself in the same way that you might typically respond to a close friend when he or she is suffering. Or you could imagine that a friend is talking to you, someone who really cares about you, a friend or a, you know, a grandmother or whomever it might be that brings up feelings of safety and nurturing for you, and have that person kind of respond to you in
now,
your
mind. Do you do this on a one-on-one or in a group, or how does it? How do you approach that?
I've done, for that particular exercise, I've done that one in a group of adolescents. Now, there's one that I think is great, and I've seen this work really well in individual sessions with adolescents and adults, and it's called the, I don't know if it really has a name, but I call it the criticizer, the criticized, and the compassionate observer. So it's like a three-chair method where the person actually sits in three different chairs and embodies first that criticizing voice that we all have, and then and they say out loud what that voice tells them, and what that internal dialogue is. Then I have them sit in another chair where they're kind of defending themselves against that criticizer. So this is the criticized speaking. And then they move to the final chair, which is the compassionate observer. And it's more of the what would probably be considered in DBT as the wise mind. And it's more of a connection of mind and heart. And it's amazing the transformations or the realizations that people can have. And they're like, wow, I didn't realize I was being so mean to myself and beating myself up so badly. And then there's another one that's really simple, that I taught our students this in the self-compassion group. And it's a very basic, simple thing to do, is if they notice themselves, you know, maybe they've done poorly on a test, or they are having a difficult situation with a peer, or in whatever it may be, they can simply put their hand over their heart and just breathe for a second and just say to themselves, I'm here for you, or I care about you.
Mm-hmm. Are these, yeah. Are these techniques or approaches that you use, are they evidence-based? Been some research showing their effectiveness?
Absolutely, yes. And if you look at Kristen Neff's website, selfcompassion.org, she actually has a wonderful resource and publications. I think it's for publications tab on her website. You can go to articles and see a number of different research studies that have been done. As a matter of fact, there's also a self-compassion scale. So there's a regular scale, and then there's a shorter form scale. So you can actually measure self-compassion. And I actually had the students at the Academy do this before and after. And there were some positive changes, and it was really hopeful. And they really seemed to get a lot out of it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I find that intriguing, especially you talk about the... I forget the term you used, the dispassionate observer, the third person after the criticizer, mm-hmm. and criticize. Because I find that in in some of the meditations of Christianity. I found it in some of the mystical and all various religions and the practices. And I find it throughout the whole idea of a dispassionate observer. Step back and look at yourself, and that way you can be fair to yourself instead of wallowing in it, which we all tend to do.
Right.
That's the criticizing. But it's very broadly thought of, and this is through all the ages. So I think you're really on to something that's really mainstream, even if it doesn't sometimes feel like it.
Well, thank you. We think so. And, you know, like as you mentioned, I thank you for bringing that up, multiculturally speaking, which I'm learning in my counseling pursuing of my master's in counseling, is that multicultural counseling is the most important thing right now, because we are in a global society. So multiculturally speaking as well, no matter where the students are coming from, whether they're coming from other countries or whether they're coming from the U.S., and no matter their background, their religion, no matter, you know, their sexual orientation, any of that, it is very broad, and it can be utilized, and it doesn't seem to have any, it doesn't seem to interfere with anyone's belief systems in a negative way. So,
okay, well, yeah, that's fantastic. The common humanity, I think, is what that's getting to, that we all have things in common, no matter our sexual orientation or ethnic background or cultural or skin color or what have you. Okay, well, we've run over a little bit, so give you about a minute. Tell us a little bit about the Academy at Sisters, a residential treatment program or residential boarding therapeutic boarding school for girls located in Sisters, Oregon. And Chelsea, would you tell us a little bit about what the school is, and more importantly, perhaps, if somebody wants to know more, how they can get a hold of you or the school?
Absolutely. Thanks. So the Academy at Sisters, it is an all-girls program. We are intentionally a smaller program, and it allows us the opportunity to really focus on what's in the best interest of each student and family. Our program tends to be have more of a focus on connection with the community, a sense of belonging, with opportunities to practice skills that they've been learning at the academy in more realistic settings as well. So the girls do a lot of outdoor recreation. They do a lot of volunteer work. They eventually are able to work themselves up to being able to go to the local high school if that's in their best interest. And so there are a lot of ways that, you know, we're helping the students find their interests and passions and helping them practice those and develop some leadership skills, empathy, and things like all those important feel good things, right?
Okay, and how to get a hold of you?
Yes. So I can be reached in admissions at either, I'll give you my cell number is 541-419-8137. And our office number is 541-389-2748. And I can also be reached by email. And that can be found on our website at academyatsisters.org.
All right. Well, very good. Thank you. Been very enlightening and an enjoyable conversation. Thank you, Chelsea. This is Lon Woodbury, independent educational consultant. Been talking with Chelsea Stroud. She's the admissions director for Academy at Sisters, and we've been talking about why mindful self-compassion for struggling teens. Well, very good. Thank you. It's been very enjoyable, Chelsea.
Thank you, Lon. Thanks for having me.